Hello, I'm Suzanne Green, an Associate Director of Neutral Management at FINRA Dispute Resolution. I want to welcome and thank you for listening to this Neutral Workshop. I'm pleased to introduce you to our FINRA faculty, Linda Feinberg, President of FINRA Dispute Resolution, George Friedman, its Executive Vice President and Director of Arbitration, and Rick Berry, the forum's Vice President and Director of Case Administration and Regional Office Services. During this workshop, Linda will look back at the highlights of 2009. George will update us on pending legislation in the House and Senate, and Rick will discuss the interplay between FINRA dispute resolution and FINRA's regulatory units. Finally, Linda will look ahead to 2010. As a preliminary matter, you can view the materials referenced in this workshop by clicking on the links right below the audio file that you just downloaded from our website. We'll let you know when a topic includes reference materials you might want to review. Linda, 2009 was a very busy and interesting year of dispute resolution. Will you please provide our neutrals with a look back at 2009?
Thank you, Suzanne. As I've said many times in the past, our case filings are counter-cyclical to the capital markets, so it should come as no surprise that our case filings have been on the rise. Let me illustrate. Our recent high-water mark was almost 9,000 cases in 2003, following the year 2000 tech wreck and the subsequent analyst problem. Our recent low-water mark was about 3,000 case filings in 2007. That, of course, followed the bull market. I don't have to tell you that things changed in 2008 and 2009, so it's no surprise that case filings are on the rise. In 2008, we received almost 5,000 cases, and last year, more than 7,000, a 43% increase over 2008. The largest increase was in customer as opposed to intra-industry cases. In 2009, there were approximately 5,200 cases filed by customers. That's a 175% increase compared to 2007, and a 42% increase from 2008. A significant number of the claims involved common stock or mutual funds. Claims relating to subprime mortgages and auction rate securities continue to account for a significant part of the increase in customer cases. And last year we noted a significant percentage increase in cases involving fixed income instruments, such as corporate bonds. These typically involve claims of over-concentration. We have also seen an increase in mediation case filings, which were at 563 for 2009, an increase of 23% compared to the same period in 2008. Yet despite the dramatic increase in case filings during the past 2 years, case processing times have actually declined. Last year, the processing time from when we served the claim to when we had served the award was almost a month and a half faster than in 2008, or 11.5 months. However, we're concerned that these processing times may not hold, as we are already seeing cases with hearings scheduled well into the future. Because expeditious resolution of disputes is one of the goals of arbitration, the commencement of evidentiary hearings within 9 months or less after the initial pre-hearing conference remains our goal, and we urge you to try to schedule your hearings to meet that timing. Since arbitrators play the key role in moving cases along, we appreciate your cooperation. Now an update on our public arbitrator pilot. As you know, last year we launched the public arbitrator pilot program. The pilot was designed for eligible claims received on or after October 6, 2008, and gives investors greater choice when selecting a three-person arbitration panel. The pilot will run for 2 years, and we are evaluating it in several ways. For example, our data show that 55% of the eligible customers have opted into the pilot to date. This has resulted in 329 pilot cases out of 600 eligible cases. We are also looking at how often the customer in the pilot strikes the entire list of proposed non-public arbitrators, or instead ranks at least one non-public arbitrator. To date, customers in the pilot have ranked one or more non-public arbitrators 50% of the time. Finally, we are surveying those parties who participated in the pilot, as well as those parties who declined. We are focusing on these data to help us make an informed recommendation on how to proceed at the pilot's conclusion. Some of you may already have been assigned to a panel that issued one of the first pilot awards, so you know that we modified the award template to highlight that the case was in the pilot. We did this to make the pilot results as transparent as possible and to make it easier to find these awards on FINRA's Arbitration Awards online system. Additionally, we amended the awards online system to include a drop-down box that makes it even easier for users to identify pilot awards. So far, there have been too few awards to draw any conclusions. We will update you in future workshops about our plans to keep the pilot in place while we consider our next steps. Now on to the Discovery Arbitrator pilot. On August 1st of 2005, we launched a voluntary 2-year Discovery Arbitrator pilot to address issues in the discovery process in customer cases. We expanded the pilot to all 4 regional offices and to intra-industry cases and extended it to December 31st, 2009. However, since the introduction of the chairperson list in 2007, parties have relied on the experience and qualifications of the chairpersons to decide discovery matters rather than reaching out to a discovery arbitrator. Thus, we phased the pilot out as scheduled on December 31st, 2009. In May 2009, FINRA's Investor Education Foundation announced an Investor Advocacy Clinic grant program to provide startup funding for investor advocacy clinics at law schools in 4 regions across the country. This winter, the foundation will award grants of $250,000 each to 4 law schools committed to launching and supporting a new clinical education program that will provide legal advice and help investors in underserved communities. The schools are located in Boston, Washington, D.C., Southern California, and South Florida. When contracts with the participating schools are finalized, Investor Education will announce the grant recipients. Dispute Resolution participated in the project and was part of the team that selected the recipients. In another outreach program, in October, FINRA co-hosted with St. John's Law School the first annual Securities Dispute Resolution Triathlon. The triathlon was a competition where student teams from 14 law schools around the country demonstrated their advocacy skills in the negotiation, mediation, and arbitration of a securities dispute. We were fortunate that so many of you, the DR neutrals, were the judges for the event. We thank you for helping to make the first triathlon so successful. Because the event was so well attended, dates have already been selected for the second annual event in 2010. With the increasing caseload, FINRA is constantly seeking ways to recruit new arbitrators. Let me share with you 2 important enhancements we rolled out in the fall to facilitate the arbitrator application and the training process. First, to make it easier for arbitrator candidates to complete the multi-page arbitrator application, we launched an electronic PDF version of the application that allows candidates to complete it on a computer rather than by hand. And second, we made the basic required training program much more accessible by offering it live via WebEx, an online meeting tool, while continuing to offer on-site training. This new training delivery system will particularly benefit arbitrators in some of our smaller hearing locations, who up until now have had limited opportunity to participate in live training. Training participants can log on to the training session from their office or home and save significant time and money by eliminating travel. For those arbitrator applicants who prefer the traditional classroom training, FINRA will continue to offer in-person basic training at its 4 regional offices. Since we launched the live video training in October, we have trained over 130 new arbitrators using this format. Recently, many of you received correspondence from us asking for your consent to verify some of your background information. I would like to provide some context on this mailing. As many of you will recall, in October 2003, dispute resolution began verifying certain biographical information provided by new arbitrator candidates. We implemented these verification procedures on a prospective basis only. That is, we did not apply the new policy to arbitrators who were already on our roster. To maintain constituent confidence in our forum, we are now verifying the background information of all consenting FINRA arbitrators who were approved prior to October 2003. 75% of our arbitrators have responded to our mailing and returned their completed verification consent forms. Your cooperation has been remarkable, and we are most appreciative. If you received correspondence asking that you sign the verification consent form but have not yet responded, we ask that you do so immediately. Arbitrators who do not return the verification consent form will be removed from the roster. We apologize for any inconvenience, but as a result of certain events, this action is necessary to maintain the integrity of our roster. If you have any questions about the verification project, please send them to Paul Milligan at paul.milligan, M-I-L-L-I-G-A-N, at finra.org. Now let me leave you with this reminder before we move on to a summary of major rule filings. With tax season just around the corner, please note that you will receive an IRS 1099 form from FINRA, provided your honoraria for service in our forum was $600 or more in 2009. Arbitrators receive 1099s instead of W-2 forms because they are independent contractors and not employees of FINRA. For this same reason, arbitrators are not eligible to receive any unemployment benefits or any FINRA employee benefits. And now, 2 housekeeping items. First, beginning on January 1st of 2010, the standard reimbursable mileage rate will be reduced slightly to 50 cents per mile. The new rate is the allowable rate set by the Internal Revenue Service. And second, as we've mentioned in prior workshops, we are in the midst of a project to convert our hearing locations from analog to digital recording. You will be pleased to hear that we have decided to accelerate completion of this project. All FINRA hearing locations will have digital recording equipment by the end of the second quarter. There are so many benefits to using digital recording, not the least of which are ease of use and retrieval. Now let's look back very briefly at the highlights of the major rule changes that went into effect in 2009. First, the dispositive motions rule went into effect almost a year ago, on February 23, 2009, and applies to all dispositive motions filed on or after that date. This rule severely limits motions made prior to claimants resting their case and provides sanctions for frivolous motions. The rule has been very successful in reducing such motions, which have decreased by about 70%. New expungement rules went into effect on January 26, 2009. Under new rules 12805 and 13805, arbitrators must follow established procedures when considering requests for expungement relief of customer claims under FINRA Rule 2080, formerly FINRA Rule 2130. The new rules have significantly reduced the number of expungement requests granted. In 2004, before the various changes to the expungement procedures, there were 1,000 executed expungements. This year, we expect that number to be around 100. Again, in March, we amended Rules 12401 and 13401 to raise the amount in controversy heard by a single chair-qualified arbitrator from $25,000 to $100,000. By raising the threshold, the rule restores the proportion of cases heard by a single arbitrator to what it was when the single arbitrator threshold was last increased in 1998, about a third of the cases. The new threshold saves money and time for the parties and time for the arbitrators. We also put new rules into effect in August to eliminate confusion about panel composition in intra-industry cases. These new procedures will expedite the processing of these cases and result in reduced time and reduced cost for the parties.
Great. Linda, thank you so much for the look back at 2009. George, arbitration seems to be getting a lot of attention from Congress right now. Will you give us a legislative update?
Sure, Suzanne. As we gather today to discuss highlights of the past year, I think one thing is clear about this forum, and that is change is constant. Now, in the past year, arbitration, including securities arbitration, has received intense examination from our legislators in Washington. Congress is now focused on investor protection. That's obvious. And mandatory pre-dispute arbitration agreements are part of that discussion. There are two proposed laws that would impact securities arbitration. Let me stress first, these are not yet laws. These are proposed laws or bills that are now pending in Congress. First, a little history. The Federal Arbitration Act was enacted in 1925 and essentially provides for enforcement of arbitration agreements, including pre-dispute arbitration agreements involving interstate commerce. The United States Supreme Court has consistently upheld the Federal Arbitration Act. Two decisions from about 20 years ago, McMahon and Rodriguez, specifically upheld the use of arbitration clauses in customer broker agreements. Okay, now the first bill. On December 11, 2009, the House of Representatives voted to approve the Wall Street Reform and Consumer Protection Act of 2009. Among many other things designed to protect investors and consumers, the proposed legislation would amend the Securities Exchange Act of 1934 and the Investment Advisors Act of 1940. The amendments would authorize the SEC to limit or prohibit use of pre-dispute arbitration agreements. Now I'm going to read the precise language in the bills. It would authorize the SEC to limit or prohibit use of pre-dispute arbitration agreements, quote, if it finds that such prohibition, imposition of conditions, or limitations are in the public interest and for the protection of investors. Again, if it finds that such prohibition, imposition of conditions, or limitations are in the public interest and for the protection of investors. The proposed legislation also directs the Comptroller General to study the costs of FINRA arbitration, as well as investor recovery rates in the arbitration process. The legislation also empowers the new Consumer Financial Protection Agency to prohibit or impose conditions or limitations on the use of pre-dispute arbitration agreements if it finds that such measures also are in the public interest and for the protection of consumers. Now, going back to the first bill, the Senate version requires the SEC to take action within 6 months of the law's enactment. So there's a specific requirement of action in 6 months. The House version has no such direction. Senate, so far, has not yet voted on the bill. Now, all of this followed a white paper by the Obama administration outlining steps it thought Congress might take to ensure investor protection. Well, what's FINRA's view on the proposed legislation? On October 6, Rick Ketchum, our CEO, testified before the House Financial Services Committee. He made several points. Let me go through them. First, FINRA has long maintained that a determination about whether mandatory arbitration agreements should be allowable is a decision best made by Congress and the SEC. Second, in light of Supreme Court precedent that upholds the ability of firms to arbitrate with customers, FINRA believes that congressional or SEC action is necessary if pre-dispute arbitration agreements are to be limited or prohibited. So as such, FINRA has no objections to the administration's proposal. However, it's important and essential for investor protection that the FINRA Code of Arbitration Procedure Rule 12-200 be maintained. This rule allows customers to require the firm to arbitrate after a dispute arises. There's a second bill, actually two of them, one in the House, one in the Senate, also addressing pre-dispute arbitration agreements in the broader consumer and employment context. These bills are called the Arbitration Fairness Acts of 2009. They would ban enforcement under the Federal Arbitration Act of mandatory pre-dispute arbitration agreements in consumer and employment contracts. Now, a question arose as to whether customer broker agreements would be included. The Senate bill specifically does cover securities and financial services agreements. These bills are still in committee and have not yet been voted on by the full Congress. Now, let me stress, nothing I've said should be read to mean that our dispute resolution forum is anything but fair and a fair and efficient place for resolving disputes. Again, nothing I've just said should be read to mean that FINRA thinks our dispute resolution forum is anything but a fair and efficient place for resolving disputes. Now, we think as arbitrators, you know that. Investor protection and market integrity are more than just taglines for FINRA employees. These are a daily mission. Investors' interests are the driving force for the transparent dispute resolution forum we operate. In other words, we believe our forum is an excellent model of fairness and investor protection. Let me give a few examples. To begin with, we're regulated by the SEC, and FINRA's rulemaking process is transparent. What do I mean by that? Well, first, rules are considered by the National Arbitration and Mediation Committee. A majority of that committee is public, and the chair is always public. The next step is for FINRA's board, again, a majority public, to authorize staff to file a rule change with the SEC. Then what happens? Well, rules are amended only after the proposed rules are published in the Federal Register and the public is given a chance to comment. FINRA has to respond to those comments, and the SEC can approve the rule change only if it believes the rule change is consistent with investor protection. Now, this process of publication in the Federal Register, public comment, and FINRA response shouldn't be taken lightly. Let me give you an example. Linda before mentioned the rule that was enacted about a year ago, modifying how motions to dismiss are handled. That rule went through a long process. You've heard about it. There are many changes, but it was significantly amended as a result of investor comments received during that Federal Register comment period. So this is an important part of our process, and the rulemaking process is indeed transparent. Now, second point, back to pre-dispute arbitration agreements. FINRA does not make firms use pre-dispute arbitration agreements, but we do regulate the content and placement of the arbitration clause should firms choose to and elect to use one. FINRA Rule 3110F has specific instructions in this regard. Here are some highlights. First, the pre-dispute arbitration agreement must contain a highlighted statement immediately before the signature line stating that there is an arbitration clause and where it can be found in the document. The investor has to be given a copy of the pre-dispute arbitration agreement. Third, the arbitration agreement must explain key aspects of the arbitration, including the presence of a non-public arbitrator and the fact that the investor is giving up the right to go to court. Other requirements on content are as follows. The pre-dispute arbitration agreement cannot contradict the rules of a self-regulatory organization, cannot limit the ability of a party to file an arbitration claim, nor can it limit the ability of the arbitrators to make an award. Next, arbitrators can initiate a disciplinary referral at the conclusion of an arbitration case if they believe that it's warranted. You'll hear more about that later from Rick Berry. Next, the rules are investor-friendly. I can go on for a long time. My colleagues are nodding enthusiastically. I won't. But some examples. These are very investor-friendly rules. First, FINRA serves the claim for the investor. I mean, stated differently, we know where to find the brokers. So the customer doesn't have to go out, hire a process server, find the broker, and then serve the claim. Next, the hearing's held at the hearing location nearest where the investors live when the events giving rise to the dispute occurred. Third, in close calls, if the investor wants an arbitrator removed for bias, he or she is removed, period. Next, FINRA has published a discovery guide for customer cases, and we codify discovery protections in the April 2000 Code of Arbitration Procedure, revisions that you heard about before in prior calls. Next, FINRA rules allow an investor to elect to participate in a class action rather than to arbitrate a claim. What about fees? Well, FINRA filing fees are low, and arbitrator compensation does not have to be advanced on a pay-as-you-go basis as at other ADR providers. And at the end, over the past 10 years, FINRA's impartial dispute resolution program has contributed to the return of more than a billion, that's $1 billion to investors as a result of this program. Now, as Rick Berry will discuss in a few minutes, perhaps of greatest importance is FINRA will enforce the arbitration award. More about that later. So, Suzanne, in conclusion, we'll continue to keep arbitrators informed of developments as the arbitration fairness bills and the investor protection bills make their way through Congress. We'll keep you posted. But again, we believe our forum is nothing but fair. And we thank you as arbitrators for your contributions to that effort.
Thanks so much, George. Well, Rick, as George just alluded to, dispute resolution and FINRA's regulatory units regularly work together. Can you please share the details about this with us?
Yes, many people don't realize it, but there's a surprising amount of interplay between FINRA dispute resolution and FINRA's regulatory units. Let's start with disciplinary referrals. At the conclusion of a case, arbitrators may make disciplinary referrals of firms and brokers based on conduct learned of or testimony presented during the life of a case. Specifically, Rule 12-104B of the Customer Code and Rule 13-104B of the Industry Code provide that an arbitrator may make a disciplinary referral at the conclusion of an arbitration if the arbitrator has reason to believe it may constitute a violation of FINRA's rules, the federal securities laws, or other applicable rules or laws. A disciplinary referral does not require the consent of a majority of the panel. A single arbitrator can initiate a disciplinary referral. If the arbitrator wishes to make a referral, FINRA provides the arbitrator with a form to refer potential disciplinary violations to FINRA dispute resolution for investigation. Recently, we added an online form arbitrators can use to make referrals. You can find a link to this form next to the audio recording for this workshop. The form instructs arbitrators not to discuss the basis of an award in the case, but only to discuss the facts and circumstances that underlie the decision to refer the case for disciplinary investigation. DR sends all of these referral forms to FINRA's regulatory units to conduct an investigation to determine whether disciplinary action is appropriate or not. Please keep in mind that this is not a recommendation by dispute resolution that discipline be imposed, but rather that a conduct review be undertaken. Let's take a look at when a referral might be appropriate. In general, an arbitrator should only refer matters that are of regulatory interest. A referral may be appropriate if a firm or broker demonstrates unethical or dishonest conduct, the conduct of a firm or broker may have violated securities laws or FINRA rules, the misconduct involves abusive sales or trading practices, including churning, unsuitable recommendations, misrepresentation in the sale of securities, unauthorized transactions, failure to reasonably supervise, and misuse or conversion of funds or securities. Now let's discuss another topic, expedited suspension proceedings. Under FINRA Rule 9554, we will initiate these expedited proceedings against a firm or broker that does not comply with an award or settlement agreement arising from a FINRA arbitration or mediation. Under Rules 12904 and 13904 of the Code of Arbitration Procedure, liable firms or brokers must satisfy their obligations under an award within 30 days of the date of service of the award. We also ask claimants to notify us if a firm or associated person, a broker, had not paid the arbitration award within 30 calendar days of receipt of the award. As a result of our steps in this regard, over 88% of all awards were paid in full in 2007, and over 86% of all awards were paid in full in 2008. Note that expedited suspension proceedings under Rule 9554 also applies to settlement agreements that arise from a FINRA arbitration or mediation as well. So here's how the expedited suspension proceedings work. If a liable firm or broker does not comply with the award or settlement agreement, FINRA sends a Rule 9554 Notice of Intent to Suspend letter to the non-compliant party. The notice advises the liable party that its securities license will be suspended 21 days after the date of the letter, unless the party, 1, pays the award or settlement agreement, 2, enters into a written settlement agreement with the prevailing party, 3, files for bankruptcy, 4, files a motion to vacate in cases of an award, or 5, requests a hearing at the FINRA Office of Hearing Officers to argue a bona fide inability to pay the award or settlement agreement. If a party fails to comply with FINRA's notice of intent to suspend, DR instructs CRD, the Central Registration Depository, to suspend the party's securities license. Suspension means that the party must cease indefinitely from engaging in any securities-related business and cannot re-enter the industry without either paying the award or settlement agreement, entering into a written settlement agreement with the prevailing party, filing for bankruptcy, or filing a motion to vacate. Now, the last thing I want to mention is our publicly available awards. Dispute resolution plays a key role in FINRA regulatory functions by publishing all awards on our public website and providing access free of charge.
Okay, thanks so much, Rick. Linda, before we conclude today, will you please tell us what's on the horizon in 2010?
I certainly will. Looking ahead to 2010, let me just mention a few things that we are anticipating will happen soon into the new year. First, we will be updating the discovery guide and the discovery guidelines. We anticipate taking those recommendations to FINRA's governing bodies and then proposing them to the Securities and Exchange Commission, where they will be put out for comment so that all of you as arbitrators, as well as all the constituents in our forum, will have an opportunity to comment on them. Second, we are going to be enhancing our arbitrator training materials following a two-year effort by a special task force that reviewed all of those training materials and made changes. Third, we're going to be introducing a FINRA arbitrator manual. FINRA now administers almost all securities arbitration disputes in the United States. Accordingly, we are rewriting the Securities Industry Conference on Arbitration Arbitrator's Manual to create a FINRA-specific Arbitrator's Manual. This new manual will reference FINRA rules and procedures rather than the CICA Uniform Code and will be aligned with the enhanced arbitrator training materials. And finally, we will continue throughout the year the second year of the Public Arbitrator Pilot Program. That program, which currently is to end in October of 2010, will be analyzed by us in detail, and we will make appropriate recommendations based on that analysis. As I mentioned earlier, we also have plans to keep the pilot going during the period of our review and recommendations. So we think it will be an exciting year for us. We also anticipate that the caseload will continue to rise and that we will be expending a lot of effort, thanks to our really wonderful staff, in processing those cases in a timely manner and with the same good customer service that our staff and that you have provided to the parties throughout the past year. We will be discussing all of these events with you in our future workshop. So thank you very much for your attention today.
Good. And thank you, Linda and George and Rick, our featured speakers today. This concludes our workshop. As always, any comments or questions about this workshop or suggestions for future workshops can be sent to the FINRA DR Call-In Workshop mailbox. The link to the mailbox is right below the audio file for this workshop. Thanks so much for listening today.